Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There's a business vernacular that's helpful to know. Acronyms like PPI, phrases like existing home sales. Once you figure it out, everything makes a lot more sense. No guarantees, though, that you're going to like what you hear. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Consumer Consequences, American Public Media's online game, exploring what the world would be like if everyone on Earth consumed like you. Online at consumerconsequences.org. And by Bank of America, through community outreach, philanthropic giving, and environmental efforts, finding opportunity and embracing it. Bank of America, Bank of Opportunity, bankofamerica.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today's Friday, everybody, October 12th. Great to have you here. And it has been, to be honest, a week of economic dribs and drabs. A housing report here, a corporate earnings figure there, nothing earth-shattering. And today stayed true to form. We learned this morning exactly what prices at the wholesale level were doing last month. That would be the PPI, the Producer Price Index, going up, as it happens, 1.1% overall, but a tolerable 10th percent once rising energy prices are stripped out. Retailers had a very so-so week. The Commerce Department said today sales were up, but word from the retailers themselves went the other way, that nobody was buying fall clothing because the weather has been so warm. Change from Nordstrom to Target cut their earnings forecasts, and many of them are sitting on piles of inventory they'll be under pressure to unload in the next couple of weeks. Bad luck for them, but bargains for consumers. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler gets us going today.
Unsold inventories translate into cheaper prices for you and me, but Richard Hastings, a retail analyst with Bernard Sands, says company profits will suffer as a result of these discounts.
That means that the retailer is going to have an increase in markdown expense and a decrease in earnings. Ouch, it's going to hurt.
Hastings says retailers have a few other options besides sales, but they're not the preferred way to move merchandise.
You can take it and you can resell it into different kinds of secondary markets, move it into a different continent and relabel it. Complicated, expensive, but that's another one of the more distressed solutions.
The best thing for retailers would be a spell of cold weather, though retail analyst Richard Gist at Deloitte & Touche cautions not rain.
They want the weather to cool down because they've got a lot of seasonal merchandise that they've got to get rid of. There's just something in the human psyche that won't allow them to buy a coat when it's warm outside. But they don't want weather that keeps people at home rather than in the malls either.
Note that he didn't say outlet malls. Gist says retailers prefer to sell discounted merchandise themselves.
You'd rather sell it yourself because you can offer discounting on your season-old merchandise while hopefully getting full price on your new and fresh merchandise that's coming in the door for the holiday season.
Many consumers don't start their holiday shopping until stuff goes on sale. Gist says those sales are likely to start earlier this season. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
This afternoon, the Food and Drug Administration approved what could be the first in a new class of AIDS drugs. Ecentris is made by Merck. It's something called an integrase inhibitor, available at the moment only by its brand name. Generics were also in the news today. A study by the website ConsumerLab.com has raised some questions about a generic version of Wellbutrin. That's a popular antidepressant. Marketplace's Jill Barshay reports makers of other generics are getting worried consumers might go back to brand names.
It's not clear whether this one study on a single generic drug is even accurate, but it is raising doubts about generics. Kathleen Yeager is president of the Generic Pharmaceutical Association. She says she's confident that the generic Wellbutrin is fine. If it wasn't, she says, Wellbutrin's maker, GlaxoSmithKline, would already be screaming about it.
Our industry is extremely competitive with the brand industry, and the brand industry does their own testing on all the generic products. And if there was an issue, it would have come to light and they would provide that information to the Food and Drug Administration.
Pharmaceutical professionals haven't come out in droves to demand the removal of the Wellbutrin generic from the shelves. But some, like Jesse Vivian of Wayne State University, want the FDA to raise the standards for some generics.
You know, the vast majority of these generic drugs are very, very effective at nearly the same rates as the brand names. There's only a few drugs that people have to be careful of.
Vivian says insurance companies steer patients to generics to keep their costs down. Even if customers wanted to switch to a brand name,
the pharmacist would probably have to say, all right, well, you have to pay the, the brand name copay, which may be, double or triple or, significantly higher than the generic ones.
Generics are much cheaper, but the industry is worried that customers might be spooked enough to pay up for the brand name drug. The industry is hoping this incident will blow over. Just to be safe, it's talking to Washington policymakers to prevent any new regulations. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
The deal of the day today comes to us courtesy of Oracle. The database company says it's going to pay almost $7 billion for BEA systems. BEA makes what's called middleware. Its products help software run those big databases more smoothly. The deal's all cash. No word as of right now on whether Oracle CEO Larry Ellison's going to take it out of the company till or try his hand in the credit market. Here's a question for you as we head into the weekend. Is golf a religious experience? Some civil servants seem to think it is. The Washington Post reports today some federal workers have been taking undue advantage of a little-known benefit program called religious comp time. Marketplace's Steve Hann explains.
For years, several high-ranking civilian employees at the Naval Undersea Warfare Center took comp time intended for religious observances and used it to go golfing. One employee saved up enough religious comp time to take a vacation to Europe, and this dodge isn't unique to the Navy.
I hope they go to confession.
Congressman Bart Stupak heads up a House subcommittee looking into the issue at the Food and Drug Administration.
What we're finding at the FDA and elsewhere, these people are racking up hundreds of hours of religious time. They don't take it.
Instead, when they switch jobs or retire, they receive big fat checks for their unused comp time.
That's fraud. It's a fraud. It's criminal. It's a crime. It's stealing.
Professor Harvey Sepulowski at MIT has been tracking tales of abuse at the Undersea Warfare Center for years.
Yeah, I can see where it starts. They can't interfere with religion, so people claim a religious day. They're not going to do anything but let them take it. And then it's open to abuse because the system doesn't allow a lot of scrutiny of these kinds of things.
After all, religious holidays are, well, sacred. Nonetheless, the problems at the Navy earned a mention in the Defense Department's Encyclopedia of Ethical Failure back in 2002. But that wasn't quite enough to spark widespread reforms. Officials at the Office of Personnel Management admit there's no government-wide system that tracks how religious comp time is being used, and they say creating one isn't a priority. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Kodak announced today it's not going to be a sponsor of the Olympic Games after 2008. The financially troubled company said it's nothing to do with China or anything like that, just a change in marketing philosophy. Investors were sort of zen today. We'll have the details and the whole week on Wall Street when we do the numbers. The military junta that rules Myanmar shut the door on the United Nations today. On Thursday, the Security Council called for negotiations with the pro-democracy opposition. The army's been running Burma for decades now, so nobody was surprised it's not interested in talking at the moment. What is new is that at the UN, China chose sides with the West against Myanmar for the first time. The change in approach comes despite close economic ties between those two countries. From the China-Burma border, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports business is booming.
This is the wake-up call in the Chinese town of Ray Lee, the sound of freight trucks heading in and out of Burma. The trucks are covered, so you can't see what's inside. But a quick tour of this border town makes it clear what's being traded here. Stop one, Ray Lee's woodworking street. Day laborers chisel and buff giant cross-sections of teak and other Burmese wood for coffee tables and home decorations. Timber is a key raw material that Burma has and China wants. Thing is, much of Burma's logging trade is illegal. At least technically it is, says taxi driver and smuggler Mr. Li.
If you have stuff you need to get into China, I can get everything done. I can arrange the trucks, the workers, the boats, and I notify the customs officials.
In other words, he bribes them. Just up the street is Rayleigh's Jade Market. All the gemstones are dug out of Burmese mines. But the shopkeeper complains that business is slow. Political instability in Burma means fewer traders on each side of the border. Eventually, though, he expects the traders back. China has an insatiable appetite for Burmese resources, and often it turns those resources into finished goods that get sent back to Burma. This economic codependency is obvious at this border town.
Burma, it's basically a province of China. China's the big brother. They're the little brother. We all say China's the elephant and Burma's the ant. And the elephant can squish the ant if he wants.
Hang out at Rayleigh's outdoor mahjong tables, and the chatter indicates even more Burma trade is coming. An 8-lane highway that links all the way to Shanghai is on the way, as are energy pipelines. Ian Holliday of the University of Hong Kong says China gets most of its oil from the Middle East. It gets shipped through the Straits of Malacca, a geographically vulnerable choke point.
China is looking to diversify its supply routes for the natural resources on which, you know, all of the economic growth depends. It's currently planning to build both a gas pipeline and an oil pipeline across Burma, which would enable supply to come up through the Indian Ocean.
Often the big action at this border town is at the motorcycle shop. Scores of Burmese men jostle to buy Chinese-made bikes for $350 apiece. This buyer says they can resell them in Burma for a $12 markup.
These motorcycles sell really quickly. The stock that comes in today will be out the door by tomorrow. This store sells hundreds every day.
The motorbikes enter Burma tax-free because they're smuggled. The guys ride them to this narrow river crossing, where a boat ferries them across for less than $1. Eventually, I cross too, unofficially. Burma looks much poorer than China. What's striking are the beggars, the potholes, and the dilapidated cars. In the stores, virtually all the household items are Chinese imports. Sandals, rice cookers, bootleg DVDs, even the toilet paper. Perhaps the Chinese processed it from the Burmese wood going the other way.
Burma doesn't have a major manufacturing capacity itself.
Again, Ian Holliday.
Just like the rest of the world, they're looking for the best quality and the cheapest price goods that they can find, and getting them from China is often the best way.
At this Buddhist temple in Burma, all the tours are in Chinese, as are the economic transactions. I negotiate for a Burmese trinket in Chinese, and I pay with Chinese currency. Despite the booming cross-border trade, Burma observers say it doesn't necessarily mean the country is a vassal state of China, that it's an airtight relationship. With the current dicey political situation, the ruling military will first and foremost focus on its own short-term survival. Still, if any outside country has any leverage, it's the Burmese junta's number one trading partner. On the China-Burma border, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Here's a little-known fact about our stockbroker business analyst friend David Johnson. He is also the parent of a college-age child, and it is, what, Parents Weekend or something?
You darn right, and I get to go back to my alma mater. So I'm joining you from University of the South, gorgeous Suwanee, Tennessee.
And how's the kid, you know, just before we get going?
No, he's doing great. He's doing great. He's got a big lacrosse game tomorrow. There's a football game, and everything's fine. But I want you to know, it's more than just, you know, parent stuff. I've been working. In fact, I think I may have something for the Marketplace T&E account.
All right, go ahead. Shoot, what is it?
So this morning, I went with some friends who'd never been to the Jack Daniel's distillery. It's less than an hour from here.
Yes.
And it was just fascinating. Jack Daniel's is interesting. If you don't know it, it's the largest selling whiskey in the world.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They passed Johnny Walker some time ago. They do it all here. They package every bit of it from here. But there was a lot of activity, and they were working, and they were building a stage, and they were running around. I said, so what's going on? They said, we have a group of contest winners that are coming in tomorrow, and we're getting ready for them because we're going to entertain them all weekend, and it's 300 people from the U.K.
Hmm.
Over half, well, right at half their business is outside of the United States of America.
You know what? I know where you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so go ahead. Now that I know, let's tell everybody.
Well, and it's just, but it's everywhere, and this is what, you know, keeps propping us up. Did you see earnings earlier this week?
That's
from
what
Yum
I was going to say. Yep, Yum Brands, and also today, what was it, McDonald's, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, the growth here is marginal or negative, but offshore they're going like crazy. Jack Daniel's says their growth is double digits, like low single digits here, double digits abroad.
Well, fold it up into a nice little package for me and tell me what that means.
It's the true, you know, spread economy is that, you know, if you have weakness here, then you try to offset it someplace else.
All right. Well, let's bring it home to something that people can sort of relate to here, which is the week on Wall Street, which really wasn't so bad. The markets were up a tad for the week. But here's what I want to know. Are we done now with this whole credit crunch thing? Last week we talked about how we the end was in sight. Have we gotten there?
You know, maybe close. We're not through with the subprime woes and the housing market. But the credit crunch, you know, one of the real concerns about the credit crunch was that there weren't going to be any more deals, and that the deals that were out there, the big multi-billion-dollar deals, were never really going to go through with it. Well, the TXU deal, which is, what, $36 billion, closed this week. Everybody's got their money. And right at the close today, I always love to see markets go up on Fridays because it's optimism over the weekend.
Because it's just fun, yeah.
Yeah, but there was a rumor about a deal that maybe coming down the pike. Dow Chemical, Emily, pulled out of a conference, and the speculation that Dow Chemical is getting ready to do something. So, it's not quite business as usual, but we're getting there.
We're getting there. David Johnson is getting there from Suwannee, Tennessee. Thank you, David.
Always good to be with you, Kai. Have a good weekend.
All right. Hey, you didn't imbibe at the Jack Daniels thing, did you?
Well, you know, it's a dry county.
Get out. Jack Daniels is in a dry county?
Yeah. No, it's a little known fact. It is, but if they give it to you, you can drink it.
All right. Well, it's wider known now. David Johnson, we'll see you next week.
All right.
Coming up, Silicon Valley geeks find treasure. Sort of.
An old switch from Synoptics or an old something from 3Com or an old... It's the detritus of this valley, really.
But first, let's do the numbers. Tech stocks led the charge today. The Dow Industrials gained 77 points, 0.5% to close at 14,093. The NASDAQ rose 0.2%, 33 points to end at 2805. The S&P 500 ticked up nearly 0.5%, 7 points, 1561 at the bell. For the week, the Dow up 0.2%, the S&P up 0.3%, the NASDAQ gained nearly 1 full percentage point. BEA stock was up 38% on that buyout news we told you about. Oracle, though, fell nearly 0.1%. Apple gained more than 3%. Today after its price target was raised by Morgan Stanley. Bond prices fell. That means the yield on the 10-year T-note rose. The number in this particular instance, 4.68%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. And by Reuters, delivering news and information that reaches over a billion people every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. Marketplace is podcasting. Marketplace Takeout is a mix of our best stories from the past week, the cream of the crop from our reporters around the world, delivered to you on the go wherever you are. Want to sign up? Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link at the top of the page. Or you can download entire shows of Marketplace and Marketplace Money at audible.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. President Bush delivers remarks on the budget in Rogers, Arkansas. The world's biggest passenger plane, Airbus A380, is delivered to Singapore Airlines. The Super Jumbo houses 471 seats split into three classes. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama arrives in Washington, where he'll be awarded the Congressional Gold Medal despite opposition from China. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Accountants for presidential hopefuls from both parties have a busy weekend ahead of them. Monday is the deadline for third quarter campaign finance reports. We'll find out how much they've all collected and who's been doing the giving. Commentator Alex Sheshinoff has been curious about campaign finance, in particular,
how much Americans think their votes are worth.
This election, the presidential candidates will spend close to $2 billion on their campaigns. But I won't see a dime of it. Most of it will go towards consultants and advertisers. It's hard to imagine a less efficient market. About time we cut out the middleman. Underwhelmed after a recent presidential debate, I decided I'd give up my right to vote for not very much. Say, a Walter Mondale collector plate. Curious how that compared to the rest of America, I commissioned a survey. The Opinion Research Corporation bugged 1,006 people for me during dinner. And this is what we found out. 53% of Americans said their vote wasn't for sale. They wouldn't give it up for anything, not even a vaccine for cancer. Everyone else, however, had a price. 15% of America would give up their vote in exchange for free gas for a year. 10% would disenfranchise themselves to appear opposite Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie in a movie. As Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me Brangelina. And 1 in 8 would prefer a $50 gift certificate for the Olive Garden to ever voting again. That seemed high until I thought of the sweet, sweet goodness of the 5-cheese ziti compared to a couple of New York politicians. There were also some interesting patterns. Men and those under 35 are the most likely to sell their vote for everything from $25,000 cash to flying first class. And the wealthier you are, the less likely you are to sell your vote, which I guess makes sense. I've yet to meet a billionaire who's bewitched by a bottomless salad or a basket of breadsticks. So it turns out the candidates are getting a good deal. They'll spend about $16.50 for every vote in the final election, a lot less than the going rate. Just shows, when it comes to the dysfunctional market of retail politics, it's the consumer who gets shortchanged.
Alex Sheshinoff is a writer up in Anchorage, Alaska. If you'd sell your vote, or better yet, if you wouldn't, let us know. Go to our homepage. It's marketplace.org. Click on the link that says Contact. Flea markets have an economy all their own. Generally, they're a place to kill a couple of hours on a weekend morning looking for bargains. In Silicon Valley, there's one where the high-tech elite and regular old engineers shop for the tools of their trade. Tamara Keith reports now from KQED.
They arrive before sunrise, flashlights in hand. The men search for deals in the bins of old computer parts, vacuum tubes, and obsolete manuals. Mostly middle-aged, some retired, these men are drawn to the monthly electronics flea market at De Anza College in Cupertino like a bad habit. It takes a certain type.
And so here you are at Nerdville.
Nerdville. He said it. On this crisp Saturday, Jeff Anderson is selling a random assortment of electronics from the back of his silver VW. Most months he's a shopper, but once a year he clears out the garage.
What do you want to buy? What can I entice you to pick up here, to purchase?
I can't even tell you what I'm looking at here.
You're looking at high-tech equipment that, going for a song, very inexpensive.
Anderson is one of dozens who pay $20 to a local ham radio club to sell old stuff.
What do you think this is worth?
How old is it?
Don't know. Make me an offer.
Like many here, Anderson is a Silicon Valley engineer. He consults for Polycom, the company that makes those black triangular phones you see on just about every corporate conference table.
One of the phones I actually designed is, see that white box there?
He points to a neighboring booth.
That's one of the ones I designed. And that's kind of a sign that you've arrived, is when things you designed
start
showing up the flea market.
The experience of seeing something you've created sitting on a blanket selling for practically nothing is common for the regulars here. Howard Charney is senior vice president of Cisco Systems, a giant tech firm. But as he walks the rows, he fits right in. There's his old ham radio buddy, Les.
Oh, hi, Howard. I think I met you at Dayton.
Yeah. Yes. I hear you on frequently selling vintage manuals. I have 3 vintage manuals, $15.
Charney has helped start up a number of Silicon Valley companies.
Sometimes as we walk around, we see the cast-offs from those companies, you know, an old switch from Synoptics or an old something from 3Com or an old, it's the detritus of this valley, really.
Charney co-founded 3Com, the network gear maker, and he says matter-of-factly,
I flew my airplane down here to come here.
He's just browsing for a bargain to make his day. Others here drove, some several hours. To them, it seems reasonable, especially if they find that perfect part for their project in the garage or at the office. Engineering consultant Russ Sherry.
Frequently you're working at smaller companies which don't have a large budget, and if you have something that's appropriate for doing what you're doing, it's no big deal to drag it in.
The finds can help build new prototypes or to test them. Some Silicon Valley companies are well known for encouraging their employees to shop here. Happy hunting! In Cupertino, California, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
It might have escaped your notice that we are just now coming up on week 6 of the football season, and yet somebody out there is already making Super Bowl plans. It's an advertiser, of course. Cars.com announced this week it'll launch its 2008 marketing campaign with 2 Super Bowl spots. Meanwhile, Christmas ads have started cropping up more than 2 months in advance. And presidential campaign ads, well, we don't need to go there, right? The marketplace players figure it's just a matter of time before some enterprising ad man takes the obvious next step.
Only 1,825,000,000,000 days till the sun explodes, so we at Globeco say, let's get shopping. It's science fact. The sun will eventually burn up its hydrogen and die, but not before swelling to many times its current size and engulfing our planet in flames. And Globeco's got everything you need now for this once-in-several-billion lifetimes event, like Hello Kitty sun visors for Junior. Radiation-proof ultra sunglasses for your teenage son. They're coated in polymer.
No matter how hot it gets, I'll look cool.
And a $10 million rocket ship so the whole family can escape to Mars. Buy now before eons of inflation make that price tag explode, just like the sun.
But by the time the sun explodes, won't my family and I have passed away?
That's true. So buy now, because time is running out.
Rico Galliano gets the writing and performing credit today. He had help from Michelle Phillippe, James Richter, and Chrissy Clark.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, the beleaguered British mortgage lender Northern Rock is no longer stuck in a hard place. After rumors of bids by several private equity firms, a consortium led by Richard Branson's Virgin Group put an actual offer on the table today. No dollar amount yet, just Branson saying it would be a, quote, substantial cash sum. It's not Branson's first venture into the world of high finance. Virgin already does credit cards and insurance. Northern Rock would be renamed, by the way, get this, it'd be Virgin Money. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Today, the Dow picked up 77 points, a 0.5% gain there. The Nasdaq climbed 33 points, 1.2%. The S&P 500 added 7 points, 0.4% on that index. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, you're looking for a cheap getaway? Get elected to Congress and K Street will gladly pony up.
If you're in Washington, it's hard to get more than a few minutes at a time of a senior member of Congress. Whereas if you are suddenly seated next to them on a fishing boat in Alaska, you will have hours and hours of uninterrupted time.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.